in this part two of the changing your career and starting your own business program that was done with Henley Business School and Henley alumni, Nima Pasha, Graham Philpott and Jane Batchelor talk about changing your career, resilience and networking as being able to change your future.
Wheel to us. Graham is presenting, as we can see. So I'd like to introduce myself and the team here. So first of all, Graham, who's just put up some slides here. Graham is a career consultant in the careers team, working primarily with pre-experienced masters, but working across the whole of the school, working with previously working with the ICMA Centre, working with those people that wanted to go to finance careers, but has worked with MBAs, undergraduates as well. Jane focuses very much on the real estate and planning side of things, working with students from undergraduate all the way through to postgraduate and beyond there. So it's, you know, a hugely successful course. And I want to say thank you so much, Andrew, Neil, for inviting us here. Hello, Jurek, as well. I'm director of the Career Service, and I'm also a Career and Professional Development Service. And I want to emphasise a professional development in a second as to why we've adapted our name a little bit. I'm also a Henley alumni. I did my master's here, and I've also done welcome to my dining room, by the way. I've just finished my doctorate about 6 months ago, finished my doctorate, my DBA, where my research is looking at professional development, particularly with the impact of future work, AI, automation, and looking at the kind of skills and qualities we need to get through. And the reason I talked briefly about professional development, you've probably seen the fantastic news of how we've gone up in the league tables for the executive MBA in the Economist rankings. We've gone from about 95 when I saw it to about 19 worldwide and number 3 in the UK. And we've got, and that's for career professional development delivery. And we've got similar results for our master's programs, and we're number 1 in the real estate program as well. And that came through. And I thought just to give you an insight, because we're all together, we're all alumni, colleagues, and friends, is to think, how did we do this? And you all relate to this, because many of you are coaches, many of you are obviously running your business. I heard the introductions at the beginning. You'll know when we're setting up something like a new provision like we run here, you really have to understand what's important. And we know the transactional side of things is important. What skills are important? Who's looking for what? Let's put them together. But as Andrew just talked about the CUBE model, it's really going a bit deeper. So what we've done with the students and the program members at Henley is really to go in a lot deeper. We use a lot of positive psychology tools. We do a lot about resilience. Now executive MBAs on the global MBA that join us the first weekend, a lot of the work is what we do. And the first opening lecture now is about the future work. And the second one is about building your resilience, because that's what we think is important. We're going to talk a little bit more about the end about what we can do to continue our relationship with our alumni. But we do have are now developing a stronger alumni career and professional development offer, because, you know, careers don't end when you've just graduated from us. So I'm also, in addition to director of the career and professional development team that I've got here, we're about 15 people. I'm also heading up the World of Work, which I established, which is really about understanding the impact of things that are coming through us. Andrew's gone through many of those, but we'd also throw in their diversity. We've just been through an experience of Black Lives Matter, and we're looking at how that's kind of impacting, and the kind of other kind of experience like climate things. So that's what the World of Work is doing as well. So there's some good things that we're doing. Well, I'd like to say so, and I would say that. Graham's driving the slides. Graham, would you mind do the next slide? Beautiful transition, if I may say. The thing I wanted to say before I hand over, there's a couple of things I want to say, is that we've also really taken seriously what we want to do. The whole thing that Andrew said about those, you know, the tsunami, to quote you, the tsunami of redundancies that's happening. The amount of the impact of the coronavirus recession is huge. And so we've got a strategic partnership with EY, and we've taken that into, and it's just started a couple of months ago, but it's really accelerating fast, to look at what we can do together as a Henley Business School and EY to join forces, see what we can do in terms of thinking about processes to generate recovery where we can. And what we're going to look at. We looked at the Prime Minister's agenda of build, 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 and we've gone to look at skills, skills, skills as a response, because we believe that's the way we move forward, and that specific skills that Andrew's talked about, just, you know, kind of going around that, the holistic approach, but we want to push that even further. And we've got some data that's coming through. We're working with the chief economist of EY and things that we're to see where we're going. And we're looking at the skills development that individuals need. We're also looking at the skills development in the sense organizations need, and looking at what a learning organization does. And the final thing is to look at the sector. And we may see, obviously, pivoting of sectors, but we may see subsectors, you know, finding it very difficult to progress. But what does that mean to us as individuals? If I nod to you, Graham, you might put forward the next slide for me. Fabulous, it's coming through. There you go. Well, what it means to us individually, and what we want to do with you now, is to talk through some of those particular aspects around coping with the COVID-19 crisis. Neil's just put up a thing saying, can you all see the slides? I'm hoping I'm getting the thumbs up from it. Yeah, Andrew's giving you a global thumbs up, so hopefully that's brilliant. So we know it's stressful, and actually the impact, even if you're doing well, and I'm going to say, adding to your list, you may also put education on there. If you can imagine the impact of higher education, universities not having the income in, we're experiencing this ourselves as well, and kind of, you know, worried about what's coming ahead and how we pivot, how we manage ourselves whilst we're also working with our students and alumni. So one of the things I want to just briefly show you, one slide from the research I did, a bunch of different kind of skills looking at, but one of the things I wanted to highlight, which Graham is going to come up a little bit more, but just for you to take away in a sense, is thinking, what is important in managing uncertainties? And my research really looked at two groups of people, and the analysis showed that those that had higher levels of career resilience were able to better manage uncertainty, and actually were able to achieve career success as well at a different level. So the kind of things, and I'll be very brief on this, is to say, understanding your own skills is positive self-confidence, understanding yourself. So this is important. So when you start losing heart about your own abilities and the world around, it's harder to pivot yourself into where you want to go. Adaptability and risk can be very difficult if you think you were in the middle of a recession, where do you go? But actually, it's being able to push forward in certain areas and connecting is really important. And self-reliance, having that ability to know that actually I can make change, is more likely for you to be able to make change. If you think, oh, well, it's the winds of change and I have to go with those people I found were less likely to progress forward. So if you're able to sort of think, I own this, I can move forward, as hard as it may seem, that was one of the things that we have. And ambition network. So ambition is a funny word. Some people react to it like, oh, I'm not sure. But actually, it's a personal ambition to think, oh, I can still progress. There is still hope. As Andrew said, there is, you know, the industry, whilst we may have a V, U, L-shaped recovery, we're unsure. But we know that at some stage we can progress. And it's important to think, what can I do to progress? Who do I need to meet with through networking? And the final thing, which links back to the work that we're doing with EY, is the motivation to learn. We need organizations to adopt a learning mindset, to know where they need to change, to adapt, to be agile, if you like. And but we need individuals to think, actually, this set of experiences and skills probably needs to be adapted much more to see where I can move forward. I'm going to stop talking there, and I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Graham. Graham, if I can hand over to you now. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Nima. Hello, everybody. I think we're up to 39 people on the call now, so it's great to have so many people on the line. So building from what both Andrew's been saying and Nima's been saying, I think we can probably all agree that a career is not like the one on the left of the screen. It's not really a straight line. It's much more of a squiggle taking unexpected turns. The picture is going inexorably up. Sometimes careers go up, sometimes they go down. What does up and down mean? I suppose success is all our own individual definition, isn't it? So because we're going to go through career paths that do change, that do move around, it's worthwhile just thinking about, okay, how should we approach that? And at the moment, a lot of people are thinking about change. It could be because it's being forced upon them. It could be because been in lockdown means that they've been reevaluating where they are. It could just be because even going into before this stage, they were already thinking about it's a good time for a change. So to break it all down into a really simple couple of thoughts, what needs to happen if you're going to have a career change? And I'd argue that two things ideally want to happen. You're going to need to think about what are you going to do next, and you're going to need to come to some level of conclusion around that. Not necessarily. I suppose that sometimes with career change comes to us. So sometimes somebody will knock on the door and say, how about doing this? And then we think, well, I'm a yes kind of person. I'll carry on and I'll go and do it. But I suppose what I'm thinking about more here is when we're the person who's driving the change. And then once we've thought about what it is we want to change to, we need to think about how can we persuade somebody to take a risk on you? And that's the same kind of thing that Andrew was talking about in terms of starting a business. If you're going to need investors, then you need somebody who's going to put investments in. So you need to persuade them to take a risk on your business idea and on you as the business creator. But as somebody who's going to get a job somewhere else in an unproven career area, we also need to make that hiring manager comfortable that we're worth that risk. So let's focus on the what are you going to do next first. Well, I think the first thing to start with is what's prompting this? What's missing in your career or in your life at the moment? And I think that moment of self-reflection at the beginning of this process is quite useful. Often we can identify that we want something to change, but we misidentify what it is that needs to be changed. So that's something that's a really good thing to consider and make a basis on. In fact, I remember the number of people were saying at the beginning that they did the PCIC, the Professional Certificate in Coaching with Henley, and I did it too. Jane did, I think Nima did as well. One of the first activities they made me do when I was doing it was the life wheel, where you say give a score out of 10 out of everything, a number of people in the room had revelations at that point. So actually, some of the things, the reasons I'm disaffected at the moment isn't actually my career. It's another part of my life wheel. And that's quite an important basis to be able to take the approach from. Then you start to think about what you want from your new life and when do you want that to change. And I have said life there on purpose. A career change is going to impact your life in a number of different ways. And what do you want that to be like? Do you want a change that gives you more work-life balance, that gives you greater flexibility, greater freedom? Do you want something that you can throw yourself into? And how quickly do you need this? Do you need this in 3 months' time because that's when your redundancy payments run out? Or have you got a longer period of time to spend? Then it's option gathering time. And I think we probably all know from if we've gone through problem solving activities at work, is that it's very easy to jump onto our first option and take that as our idea forward. But it's often worthwhile waiting and thinking a bit more and talking to other people and getting ideas and think a broader range of options before you then decide which one or number you're going to focus on. Then a gap analysis. How close is your current set of knowledge, skills and experience according to the new career that you want to go towards? And then put in whatever your gap analysis is, what's your development plan in order to fill that? Now, I think at that point, we then get people who are very confident and they think, I don't need to fill in my gaps at all. I can go and fill in as I go. And you get another group of people who tend to be a little bit unself-confident and they feel they need to close that gap entirely before they can make the break. And I think that's a good point for you to think which side of that continuum are you on. And actually think about how much of that gap do you need to complete before you make the change and how much can be completed once you have started the job. Because normally, if you were going to be promoted in the job in the same career path, you would probably not be fully competent in knowledge, skills and experience. They would be expecting you to build up some of that in your new role. So maybe that's the same in the career change as well. So I don't want to dwell on that because that allows us to be able to put questions in. Let's think about the other side. So how about persuading somebody to take a risk? And this fits in really well with Pasha's five criteria that we saw before. Believing in yourself, having the self-confidence and the self-belief that you can, you have the abilities to become good in the new role is a really important first step. Because if you don't feel that yourself that you're worth the risk, it's going to be difficult to convince somebody else. So working that and thinking, how can I change that if you need to, is a really good step before you start trying to persuade other people. Then you can go through a branding exercise. You can start to brand yourself as your new career self, your new professional self. Starting talking about yourself in the new way is going to help convince you that you're that kind of person. It's also going to change the minds of people who already know you. And it's going to mean that whenever you meet somebody new, that's what they're going to know. They're not going to know that you're from this old career, you're on that new one. Then you can think about how to make yourself known, and you need to be able to understand the job that you're going towards to think about the best way of doing that. Networking was, again, one of Nima's five points on her scale. Networking is one way to do that. There's all sorts of social media. There's all sorts of different ways of being able to do that. But making yourself known to the people who might hire you is an important step. And then once you get known to them, go through the relationship building stage. And I put this as the last point. It's not necessarily the last point. It can start earlier, but how can you mitigate the risk? How can you mitigate the risk that means that somebody will take you on? The building of the relationships is already doing that, but maybe there's other things that you can be doing. Maybe you're going to want to move into data analysis for marketing data, because you see that as a growth area. Is that something that you can start to do for a friend who's got a small business, for a charity that you're organized with, for the school if you're in the PTA? Are there ways you can start using those skills live in a different way, in a small scale, before somebody has to commit to paying you a salary for it? So those are the things to think about, and those are the things to prompt the conversation tonight. You might be thinking after this, actually, I want to do some more work on this. If you go onto Henley Live, hopefully all of you are aware of Henley Live, which is the alumni portal for the business school, you'll see that there are careers pages on there. We've got some workbooks on there, including one about changing careers. There's access to a library of webinars. There's also mentoring. The alumni team organize that. That's not ourselves who organize it as well. So those things are all live to all of our alumni. And if you've graduated in the last 4 years, you can book one-to-one appointments with us as well. And you can find out how to do that on Henley Live. So that's the end of the slides I wanted to talk about today. Let's say we've got Jane online as well. Now we've had at least one person in the introduction say that they come from a real estate kind of a background. So just to reiterate, Jane's very much been working with real estate students over the last sort of 7 or 8 years.
Jane, you want to introduce yourself? Because you're one of the first in there, but we didn't get the chance. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Nice to meet you all. Thank you all very much for bringing me along and inviting me to. This is very exciting. As Nima and Graham have both said, I work with the real estate and planning students. That's mainly undergrads and postgraduate taught students, but we do also have the Flexi course, which are for people who are in work. So people who are making career changes and are thinking about sort of moving into the built environment sector. Like Graham and Nima, I've done the professional coaching qualification through Henley, so I've had those skills too. So it's quite an interesting discussion and ideas of what we're hearing from everybody. And I think that the way that the world of work is changing, as you said, Andrew, this whole situation with the global pandemic has been an accelerator for many of those changes. And it feels very much that we're moving into an environment where ethics, the ESG, the ethics, the social, the governance of how we run our businesses and how we look at the way we work and engage with our employers or employees is going to be very much at the heart of what hopefully will come out the other side of this particular recession.
Excellent. Great. Thanks very much, Nima, Graham and Jane. Can I raise a point going back to the start? The first slide that I put up, there's going to be tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of people going to be made redundant coming out of this. And we've talked about the sexy side of starting a business, but there's going to be lots who are just going to look for another job, change their career, parallel career, and trying to make the same sort of salary level. What's the the views of people around what are the best job sites? Is it the job center? Is it job search? Is it LinkedIn? Where are the places that people can look for this career change to find a bulk standard job to be able to pay the mortgage and stuff like that? Can we talk about that a little bit in terms of career change or job finding and that?
Jane shaking her head when you said
go ahead, Jane. So where do we go and find a job when we, you know, when you know, we thought about, you know, so where do we just find a job if the business idea isn't going to work out? Where are we going to find a job?
There's an image that we use with our students quite a lot, and it's sort of tied in with the hidden job market, and it's the idea of an iceberg. And the top sort of bit is peeking above the water, but underneath is a huge amount underneath it. Now, most people looking for jobs start at the top of the iceberg and go down. So they look at what's advertised. So they're seeing a very small proportion of what the opportunities are. Most employers will start from the bottom of the iceberg and look up. So they will look at internal contacts, they'll look at personal referrals, they'll look through networking, through word of mouth. Right. The only sort of side of the industry where you have to be mindful that doesn't work quite so much is a public sector. So because they have a legal obligation to advertise jobs because it's public money. But most jobs, particularly in the private sector, you'll never see them advertised. So the critical thing, if you're thinking about rechanging or readjusting your career or looking for other opportunities, whether it's your choice or whether it's because circumstances have created you an opportunity, and it's about adopting that growth mindset that Nima was talking about being adaptable and being excited about this opportunity. Okay, yeah, you could look at it grim. You could say, oh dear, I'm losing my job. Isn't it awful? We've got a global pandemic. There's hundreds of thousands of millions of people dying. Oh, woe is me. No. Actually, this is a chance to press pause and go, what do I want from my career? What do I want from my life? Actually, this is giving me a chance to adjust that and to actually seek out new opportunities and use the brilliant people we have in this room today who are executive coaches who can help possibly coach you through that sort of thinking, that thought process, and then identifying where your skills, as Graham's talked about, your skills, your interests, your passions, what excites you, your strengths, and then actually going out and networking, reaching out to people, talking to them, making those contacts, having those conversations, initially just to sort of find out and scope out ideas. But, you know, then you're starting to get your reputation, your name out there, and people will start making referrals, go and speak to this person. And suddenly, you know, before you know it, you're starting to sort of get the ball rolling in the areas that you're looking for. So I would strongly endorse looking for those hidden jobs, the ones that are never advertised, because they're probably the most ones that are most exciting and the ones that are actually going to give you that financial reward you're looking for.
So thank you very much to all the contributors this evening, to Nima, to Graham, to Jane, to Yorick, and most importantly, everybody else on the call for the interaction, and Kirsty and Neil and that for helping with the jockeying along and the questions and stuff like that. So thank you all very much for your time and that this evening.
Yeah, that was really good.
Thanks,
Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
Bye.